Save big on your Thanksgiving feast, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packs of juicy Kroger red, green, or black seedless grapes for $3.99 with your card and a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packs of flavorful Private Selection 80% Lean Angus ground chuck for $4.99 each with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant Sweet Tango Apples guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.
Murder. Ba-ba-da-ba. Welcome to Death Do Us Part podcast, hosted by my wife, Jamie.
Hello.
And myself, Mark. What up, y'all?
Hey.
Hey, everyone.
Welcome to the shit show.
Yeah, it's been a day so far.
It's been a fucking month.
It has been.
It's been, yeah.
A lot of doctor's appointments.
Yeah.
A lot of shit going on.
Yeah.
But Jax had surgery today.
Jax had his very first surgery today.
And he did great.
He did.
We had to remove a mass from his hand.
Yep. That was attached to the tendon.
Right.
So they had to remove it from the tendon, then repair the tendon.
Right.
So he went into surgery thinking he was coming out with a Band-Aid and could play video games.
Yeah.
So then after surgery, he's like, well, at least I get to go home and play games. And I'm like, my dude.
Yeah, not so much.
You might want to look under that blanket there,
not
buddy.
Not so much.
Yeah. So he's in a splint.
For
6 weeks. Because he had to repair the entire tendon sheath at the top of his hand. So.
But we're hoping it's nothing. It's not a cyst.
Nope. But we don't know.
We don't know. It's been biopsied.
But it looks like nothing,
according
to the doctor.
He made us feel pretty good,
yeah.
You know, that it wasn't anything.
Yeah.
So, but Jax has had this for about 6 months.
Out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere
it
grew.
And then it started to hurt.
Yeah, and it didn't bother him, so we didn't really think anything of it.
Because it's the typical spot for a ganglion cyst.
Exactly.
So that's what we just assumed.
That's what we assumed.
But when it started to hurt, we took him in.
And then we find out, we're told after the MRI, we get a call from the primary doctor who saw the MRI and was like, this ain't...
It doesn't look good.
Yeah, this ain't a cyst, and you guys need to be prepared for the doctor, for the surgeon tomorrow.
So they said it could have been a neoplasm, which is... Generally, neoplasms are malignant.
Right.
That's what I had on my pancreas.
Right.
And it's just because the consistency of it, of what's inside of it, was not consistent, I guess is the best way to put it. Ganglion cysts are filled with fluid.
Right.
This wasn't all fluid.
Right.
But when he took it out, it looks like a fucking ping pong ball. He took a picture for Jax.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Jax wanted to see it.
And it's the size of a ping pong ball.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a perfect fucking circle.
It is.
So
it is.
Yep.
So we'll but Jax, he's doing great right now.
Yeah. He is.
He was a little. I felt terrible. He was crying after. You know, he was
because he couldn't. He had the block.
Yeah.
He couldn't feel his fingers.
And I just wanted to go back to normal.
Yeah,
and
that's
I'm
the
like,
worst
oh
part.
My god,
and then
god,
when it
buddy.
Starts to wear off and it tingles. And
yeah. But he's doing okay right now.
Yeah.
So.
So we did that.
But if you guys could keep them in your thoughts, we would appreciate that.
Yep.
And then I have my surgery coming up December 9th.
Yep.
On my mass and
on your butthole.
On my butthole. Yep.
Welcome
I'm a
to
little
the family,
nervous.
Guys.
Yeah.
Butthole.
I'm a little nervous, but I got cleared yesterday by the cardiologist. They were at my pre-op, they were worried about my heart being,
which,
you know,
I don't
which
think
I
they
coded
take your,
twice.
Yeah, I don't think they take your white coat syndrome. Into
no, they
account,
don't.
Though.
But my heart rate was up to 130.
Yeah,
so
now
they made
we
me
both
see
have
a
cardiologists.
they made me see a cardiologist at Rush, which is not close to us, the next day. So I had to see him. He cleared me, but he still wants me to get an echo something to make sure.
He wants an ultrasound of your heart.
Yeah, just to make sure nothing structural. Yeah,
which I had. I just had one.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But he cleared me regardless, so.
Now we both have cardiologists.
Yeah, right? My God, dude. We're a fucking pair.
Seriously.
Dude.
Leah locked her keys in the car this morning.
Yeah. Yes,
while
she
Jax
did.
Was in surgery.
Yeah, she did.
So, yeah. That's where we're at today.
So, I know I've gotten a lot of messages what we think on Delphi.
Yes.
Because this just broke that he's been found guilty.
So, I've been paying attention as much as I can. I'm back to getting forced almost every shift.
Yeah.
So, I haven't had a lot of time to look.
I really haven't researched it myself, so I don't have my own beliefs yet.
I know people are pretty torn.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people, there's no DNA evidence linking him, which is a huge thing for some people.
And that was in the messages. Yes, they were having a hard time with that.
Want the DNA evidence.
Sometimes
they're
not
always
going
to get it.
Yeah. Sometimes there's not. Sometimes it's just circumstantial.
It's circumstantial. So the bullet that they found in between the two girls, they found the same bullet in his house.
Exactly.
He confessed to his wife on the phone.
Right.
One of the listeners, Judy, brought up, she thought he might have recanted. I didn't hear that. I don't
know. I didn't hear that
but
either.
I know that there was a significant amount of information that came out at trial. And they kind of hinted to some of it on the news. Like, all the stuff that they kept close to the vest.
Yeah.
They hinted to some of the news, but still didn't release a lot of it. And it's going to be a couple months before it's all public record.
Right,
but
right.
There's so much that we just didn't know.
Right.
So much.
Right.
There might be an internet connection to this guy. There's
which
so
I
much.
Still believe there is.
There's so
I
much.
I still
that we
believe
didn't
there
know.
Was a catfish,
you know, but then
type situation.
They hinted at things in the very beginning. Like, it got leaked almost at the very beginning of the case that one of the girls might have had her throat cut, which is why they were buried with scarves.
Right.
And I could have heard wrong, but I swear I heard that on the news.
Yeah.
So I don't know. And then sexual assault, like they're saying there wasn't sexual assault.
Yeah.
But the girls weren't, one of the girls wasn't dressed.
Exactly. Like,
so
that doesn't make sense.
No.
So
there's so much we just don't
know. We apologize, but we have not had time to go through all the information yet.
I was going to do it today when Jax was in surgery, but then I became a fucking basket case.
Oh, so, mama had to be held.
Mama needed her mama.
Yeah.
They wheeled him away and I was like, you're going to be good, dude. You're okay.
And then
I turned around and I said, and I'm
down.
About to not be.
Yeah.
And I ran from the back room so I could cry in the waiting room.
Yeah. But so, I apologize. We apologize. We have not had enough time to look through it. By the next episode, we should have gone through everything. And before we start the next episode, we'll touch upon our beliefs.
Which, I'm almost done with the next episode.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Oh, good deal.
So I should be able to finish it in the next day or so.
Good deal. And now today was a request.
Yes, Judy.
Yes.
So we're doing, it's the murder of Leslie Newlander by her husband, Dr. Robert Newlander.
And this happened in Syracuse?
In Syracuse, New York. And that's where Judy and Lindsay are from. So it was a huge fucking case out there. It was a huge case in general.
I don't remember it. And I
people
didn't
compare it to The Staircase. Do you remember that one?
I do remember that.
So
yeah.
They compared it a lot to The Staircase. And it's very similar to The Staircase. I'm still torn about The Staircase one.
I'm still torn about that one, too.
But
I think it was an accident, to be honest with you.
Listen, I am not opposed to the fucking owl theory. Like,
yeah,
there were feathers in her fucking hair.
Right.
Like, whatever.
But when you fall down the stairs, you fuck yourself
they
up.
They were concrete stairs.
Exactly.
So,
you fuck yourself up.
I've seen it.
I've had cases. I had a case by myself.
Yeah.
Remember? It was one of my last cases where the guy was thrown down the stairs.
Yes.
And it didn't get approved because there just was not enough evidence
that
he got pushed down the stairs.
Yeah.
And he fucking died from it.
Yeah. So, I mean, that
was less stairs. That was only about 8 stairs
yeah.
that he fell down.
Well, and the thing is, like, head wounds, man. Like, you can tell a lot from a fucking head wound. And people don't think you can because a lot of the times the head wounds...
They bleed.
Well, they bleed, but you don't see them. You're looking at hair and scalp. And you're not looking at...
Right.
Like, with this case, you didn't see the inside injury.
Right.
It looked like somebody took a fucking axe to this woman's fucking skull.
Right.
So, you don't see that, though. You see the skin and the hair, you know?
Right.
So... But this one, it's, I don't know.
So I didn't look it up. I kind of wanted to be surprised, and I wanted to see how the episode went with you just kind of telling me.
Yeah. So. I mean, I think it's a good one.
I'm excited for it.
Yeah. It's just the whole thing is fucky.
Cockamamie.
Like, yeah. Like, the daughter is very involved, and... When push comes to shove at the end of the day, like, he involved his kid.
Yeah.
And he put her in a shit position. And I think she lied for her dad. And she tried to lie for her dad. And he, because of her, he probably could have gotten away with it. Because of her emotions. Because that's what juries play on.
Yeah.
And they know that, you know. But how it became an accident to murder is kind of... insane. That's where the twist is.
Okay.
So, yeah, there's a twist.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, you know,
I like twists.
And then as forensics get better and better.
Oh, yeah.
They find more shit.
You're right.
You know, you get cops that hoard evidence. Thank God for that.
You're right.
They're not throwing shit out. And, you know, 9 years later, 10 years, 11 years later.
They find shit
on a piece of evidence that they've had for 10 years.
Right.
So...
Well, I'm excited for it, so I think we should just jump right into it.
All right, you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. So there's not a super, like, a lot of information about their background. Like, I couldn't really find it. Did you just chug coffee? Who the fuck does that? You're a psychopath.
Yeah, I did. I thought it was just going to be a simple gulp, and it was more than a simple gulp, and I almost choked on it.
You're a psychopath.
Yeah. Black coffee.
You wear socks when you sleep, too, don't you?
No. Well, I wear shoes
now. Yeah, because you're fucking weird. Yeah. All right. So, Leslie London and M. Robert Newlander were married in 1984. Robert actually brought two children from a previous marriage with him, Emily and Brian. And together they had Jenna. And shortly after, their son, Ari, was born. Leslie was actually a nurse at the time. She left her nursing career to be a stay-at-home mom, and Robert was an OBGYN in Syracuse. He went on to build a very prominent practice and actually became one of the most renowned gynecologists in the area.
Oh, really?
He was birthing thousands of babies.
No shit.
Leslie was a popular socialite involved in several charities. One of them was Operation Southern Comfort. She also... took part in rebuilding homes after Katrina on the coast.
Oh, good for her.
Was very active with the Syracuse Stage and Symphony. Everyone described Leslie as kind and warm. And despite her wealth and the 8,000 square foot home.
What?
That they shared.
Holy fuckballs.
She was unpretentious.
Uh-huh.
She never flaunted it. You'd never know. Like,
yeah.
She came from money.
Damn, dude.
They were very active.
Hook me up.
I know. Members in the Jewish community and part of Temple Concord. From the outside, they had the perfect family and marriage.
Flip the page.
Flip the page. In the year 2000, Dr. Newlander's practice was audited by the area's largest health insurer, Exelis, I believe is how you say it. The audit determined that they had overpaid Dr. Newlander by approximately $1.8 million. So they were the carriers of, like, Blue Cross Blue Shield.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know how to explain it out here. Like, if you don't do insurance, it's not something you would really know. So just know that, like, Blue Cross Blue Shield was the big one.
Yeah.
This company handled all the claims for Blue Cross Blue Shield.
Yeah.
They stated that... Newlander's office had incorrect billing practices. There were coding errors, documentation problems, and issues of medical necessity of services, which is huge. Like, That's Medicare fraud right there.
Yeah.
That is the number one cause of Medicare fraud is unnecessary medical.
Oh, no shit.
Medical services. Like,
yeah.
When I, obviously I worked for an ambulance company.
Right.
There are certain criteria that you have to hit to need an ambulance. And if you don't hit that mark, they're not going to pay for the ambulance.
Oh.
So like, if you're in a wheelchair, you can go by MedCar.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
if you're on oxygen, you can't.
Right.
If you can't transfer yourself, you can't. If you have dementia, you can't. You have to go on a stretcher. If you,
right, right.
You know, if you have, and you can't say weakness. Weakness isn't allowed. It's not a good enough term.
Yeah.
For medical necessity. So that's the number one cause of Medicare fraud, right?
Yeah.
Dr. Newlander denied any wrongdoing or any overpayment, and he refused to pay any of it back.
Oh, wow.
He actually hired a private consulting company to dispute the findings of the audit. And Exelis got tired of the back and forth and filed a lawsuit against the doctor after he presented them with the consulting firm's findings.
Ooh.
It's alleged that those findings were doctored to show that he was not actually overpaid.
Oh.
But Blue Cross Blue Shield is like, no, fuck you.
Right.
We fucking overpaid you.
Right.
By a lot. And in hindsight, $1.8 million to Blue Cross Blue Shield is fucking 27 cents to us.
That's nothing to them.
Right. So their findings completely contradicted the findings of the audit.
Mm-hmm.
And on January 1st of 2009, Exelis actually terminated Dr. Newlander from its provider network.
Oh.
Which means Blue Cross Blue Shield will no longer cover him. So any of his patients with Blue Cross Blue Shield can no longer go to him.
Can't see him.
That's huge.
That's big.
So at that time, the practice had 4,000 patients.
Whoa.
Covered by Exelis. And almost immediately, approximately 45% or 1,800 of those patients were now gone.
No shit.
They had to drop Dr. Newlander on as their doctor because their plans didn't cover services provided by him because he's now out of network.
Wow.
So.
Damn.
Because of this, Dr. Newlander was forced to cut salaries of his staff, but also he had to lay off several clinical workers, including nurses.
Yeah. Oh, fuck yeah.
In May of 2009, Dr. Newlander filed a countersuit against Exelis. He filed it in the state Supreme Court in... okay, Judy sent this to me phonetically. So, Onondaga.
Okay.
County.
Onondaga?
I'm probably saying that wrong.
Yeah.
Or Onondaga? I don't know. What? I'm not saying it again.
In Syracuse.
Yeah. he said that they illegally terminated him from the network without any explanation. He stated that Exelis violated the state law by not giving him a written explanation of the reasons for the contract termination or an opportunity for a hearing or review. So they didn't give him a chance to argue it.
Yeah.
They said they did. So no. He accused Exelis of only caring about profit. Yes.
Right.
That's what they do.
Yeah.
They're a for-profit company.
Hello.
He asked for at least $300,000 in damages to compensate for the loss of patients and practice revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And he also had to eliminate 4 clerical jobs and cut salaries of everybody in the office by 10%.
Oh.
Yeah.
That hurts.
So he contends that this was a retaliatory move by Exelis in response to him disputing the audit. This went on for years.
Really?
It essentially ruined the practice.
No shit.
And their marriage.
Oh.
A dun dun dun.
Ooh.
So in 2011, Robert, I believe they called him Bob in like the Dateline and shit.
Yeah. Robert, this was on Dateline?
It's always on Dateline.
Oh, of course it is.
It's always on Dateline.
Yeah, of course it is.
So Robert was working at Faxton St. Luke's Hospital in Utica, New York.
It's simple math. Tim Horton's 2-3-4 menu fills your mornings without emptying your pockets. $2 gets you a hot coffee or a classic bagel. $3, try a sausage and cheese English muffin or 2 classic donuts. And for $4, enjoy an egg and cheese croissant or an iced cap. Do the math. It all adds up to delicious deals. Only at Tim's. The Tim's 2-3-4 menu is available until 2 p.m. at select Columbus, Ohio restaurants. Terms apply.
Disfruta de un invierno más acogedor con JCPenney. Con suavecitos suéteres para damas a solo $19.99. Pijamas festivas para toda la familia con 40% de descuento. O envuélvete a ver películas en familia con una cálida manta de mink sintético a solo $24.99. Disfruta de un invierno más acogedor y grandes ahorros. JCPenney. Vale la pena. Ofertas válidas hasta el 21 de noviembre en selección de estilos. Las ofertas se excluyen de los cupones. Detalles en la tienda jcp.com.
So now at this point at the hospital, he's delivering really half the number of babies he delivered at his own practice in the years prior. According to coworkers and former employees, Robert's behavior had changed in the past several months. He would scream at people unprovoked. And it was said that, quote, virtually everybody who's ever worked, or excuse me, everybody he's ever worked with has either sued him or quit or been involved in some type of dispute with him.
Ooh.
In 2012, due to the ongoing battle with Exelis, Robert left the hospital and was essentially unemployed now at this point.
Yeah.
So financially, they're suffering.
He's struggling.
I mean, they had 4,000 patients.
Yeah.
And one of his nurses, Terry, she comes up a lot in this.
Yeah.
She told him, like, listen, if you keep fighting with Exelis and we lose our Blue Cross Blue Shield patients, that's half our practice.
Right.
Like, half our practice is gone. And one of the detectives, actually, his wife saw Dr. Newlander.
Yeah.
Like, he birthed her kids. The midwife birthed their kids. And she had to leave the practice.
Oh, no shit.
When this happened. So he was familiar, you know, with the doctor.
Yeah.
So the marriage was also suffering. They were going through, they were going to do a trial separation. Some sources say that both were looking for apartments, you know, for themselves. Leslie was for sure looking for an apartment. Friends say that she was actually due to sign a lease the day that she died.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she had found an apartment and was due to sign a lease.
Yeah.
Leslie also had told a friend that Robert wasn't handling the divorce well, and his behavior was scaring her.
Mm-hmm.
It's also alleged that Robert was unfaithful throughout the marriage and had multiple affairs.
Yeah.
It's not really something they looked into because really the focus became he found out she was going to sign a lease and lost
that was
his
it.
Shit.
Yeah.
So Robert had also recently found questionable texts on Leslie's phone, according to him. They were from a 30-year-old man by the name of Nevin Robbie.
Nevin.
It was a guy that Leslie met at Starbucks.
Yeah.
Excuse me. She was a lively, like, outgoing extrovert, and she had a thick, like, New York accent. And
right.
He said they just hit it off. They were from different, you know, different sides of the tracks, so
right,
to speak.
Right, I get it.
The texts were allegedly sexual in nature.
Mm-hmm.
He denies this. No one's ever seen the texts that came out.
Right.
And they both adamantly...
I'm surprised they didn't, like, dump the phone this evening.
So it comes up later.
Because that's kind of important.
It is, but it's not. It comes up later.
No,
why they...
you still, on a deceased person, you still want to see what's on their phone.
Well, it was months before. It wasn't still. At the time. So it comes up a little bit later why they didn't really involve him.
Yeah.
So both Leslie and Nevin denied that this was a physical relationship. And Robert actually spoke with Nevin. He texted him.
Mm-hmm.
He was confrontational at first. Like, why are you talking to my wife about our marriage? And he's like, listen, right. Like, I don't have a pony in her game. She doesn't have a pony in my game. Like, we can have a conversation, an unbiased conversation, get an unbiased opinion.
Right.
And at the end of the conversation, Robert was like, okay, well, thank you. Like, I appreciate you talking to my wife, but leave our marriage out of it.
Yeah.
Like, I appreciate you being her friend, but leave our marriage out of it.
I get it.
However, Leslie ended up telling Nevin that Robert was enraged by the text messages. Nevin would later tell the police that after Robert confronted the two of them, Leslie told him that Robert wasn't handling it well. And this is when it came up that the behavior was scaring her. So, Robert was also allegedly struggling financially due to the loss of patients and the possibility of having to pay back the insurance company.
Ooh,
like, they wanted their fucking money.
Man. Yeah.
And now you've lost all your patients, you've lost your practice, and they want almost $2 million.
You got nothing, dude.
Yeah. So the divorce to Robert would have been another huge
financial
blow.
Fuck
because
yeah.
New York is a no-fault state, which means everything gets split in half.
Yeah, yeah.
So he wouldn't be able to take the house and be like, okay, here's my $3 million home, pay it off. Leslie would get half of everything.
Right.
Despite all this, Leslie kept up the facade. Neighbor and friend Mary Jambelik said, quote, everyone knew the Newlanders, it seemed. They seemed like the perfect couple, the perfect marriage, the perfect family, really. Leslie was a fabulous woman, very lively, energetic, and unassuming. Mary actually experienced this generosity firsthand. She was on vacation in the Czech Republic, fell, had a fall, developed an infection, and almost died. She was in a coma for 3 weeks.
What?
From a fall. Leslie was the first to see her when she got home, and Mary said, quote, I remember hugging everyone, and I remember Leslie saying, we're so glad you made it.
Yeah.
And then they discussed how a fall could cause that much damage.
Wow.
2 days later, Mary would be told that Leslie was dead.
What the
She said,
fuck?
Quote, I couldn't believe she just saw me and told me how grateful she is that I'm alive and she's dead. It was shocking. It was overwhelming. Mary was told it was a freak accident that Leslie had slipped and fallen in the shower.
What the fuck, dude?
She said, quote, at the time I thought, I guess that could happen even to a 61-year-old, very healthy, athletic person because it had just happened to her.
Yeah.
She almost died from a fall.
Dude.
So.
Weird.
On September 17th, 2012... Robert got up and went for a jog, which he later stated was normal routine for him. He got back, made coffee, brought a cup up to Leslie's room. They were sleeping in separate bedrooms.
Mm-hmm.
He heard the shower, so he left the coffee on the nightstand. He would say later that they had somewhere to be at 9 o'clock. So an hour later, just before 8:30, Robert went to check on Leslie. You wait till you gotta leave, like you gotta be somewhere at 9.
Right.
Get to getting.
Hello?
We were early today, by the way.
We were really early.
Yeah, we were.
Man.
Fuck yeah, we were.
Fucking 5:30 in the morning.
So, we were out the door at 5:15.
Fuck yeah, we were.
They said to be there by 5:45, and we live literally 7 minutes away.
Man, I had to take my medicine at 4 in the fucking morning.
Jackson's alarm went off at 3, and I rolled over, and I was like, no. He's like, bleh. I said, shut the fucking alarm. He got up. Left the room, came all the way downstairs, came back up, and I'm like, shut the fucking alarm off. And he's like, I don't know where my phone is. What the fuck were you doing?
Right.
What did you go downstairs for? And he's like, my phone. I said, it's right here. I said, now go back to fucking bed.
Right.
I woke him up at 4:30.
Right.
Why the fuck? He's like, I'm going to get up at 3.
I'm going to shower.
I'm going to shower, and then I'm going to like nap while you and Dad are getting ready. I said,
none of that happened.
I have to pull on sweatpants and like swipe some fucking deodorant on. You're going to be lucky if I put a fucking bra on.
Right.
3 o'clock. Shut. And then this is how big of like pieces of shit we are. I literally laid a bag of cheese popcorn in between the two of us in bed, and we laid there at 3 a.m. eating cheese popcorn while we fell back to sleep. Yeah. We're pieces of shit.
It is what it is.
And then he said today, he went to say slippery floor, and he said flippery slore, and I was like, oop, there I am.
Yeah.
Right there.
Right.
That's your mom.
Yep.
So an hour later, just before 8:30, Robert went to check on Leslie. He found her lying in the shower, not breathing, no pulse. Okay. This man's a doctor.
Yeah.
Keep that in mind.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
That's my first thought.
So, okay, you go upstairs, you find me laying in the shower. What's the first thing you're going to do other than fucking scream?
Check for a pulse or start doing CPR.
What else?
Call 911.
The shower is still on.
Oh, turn off the water.
Okay. That would be like, right?
And put on clothes.
You don't want like water like
flying.
Okay. He didn't shut off the water.
Why?
One of the detectives shut off the water.
How the fuck was it not, like, splashing into his face?
It was a fucking fancy shower.
What the fuck?
So, he screamed while running towards the bedroom of 23-year-old daughter Jenna to call 911. at 8:25, and I tried to keep this in as much order as I can because her 911 call was weird.
Okay. What do you mean by that?
She called 911 from her room. She wasn't even in the bedroom yet, the master bedroom. Oh, so she didn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
He yelled at her to call 911. At 8:25, she calls 911 and says her mom was found on the floor of the shower. They asked if she was breathing, and she said, I don't know. I'm not in there. Let me go over there.
Yeah.
And then she's like, well, I'm on a house phone. Like, hang on. She was on, like, a landline.
Oh, okay.
This is 2012.
Right.
So she put 911 on hold. She's like, I have to go to a different phone. So Robert, at this point, ran back towards Leslie and starts to move her and would say later that he moved her because he, quote, he can't see. The lighting is not very good in the bathroom.
What?
The fuck do you need a light for?
What?
First of all, second of all, it's 8:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
Flip a fucking curtain open.
Exactly.
He's been a doctor at this point for 30 years.
Oh, my God, no.
You can't find the sternum in between your wife's breasts?
Right.
You, what?
Sir, what kind of a fucking doctor?
I've intubated in the dark.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
What med school did you go to, you know?
So now Jenna's on the phone with 911. She says, quote, I need to go over there and see if she's okay. Jenna was calling at this point from her mother's office on a landline. She says, quote, I need to put you on hold. I'm not, it's like a house phone. She said she needed to get closer to the bathroom. As Jenna gets to the bathroom, she grabs the bathroom phone, because, you know, rich people have phones in the bathroom.
Of course.
My uncle did.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow.
Only I don't fucking know. Like, when you fucking call everybody.
Oh, I would call everyone telling them I'm pooping.
And now, I mean, you don't have to. You have your cell phone.
Right.
So she finds out the bathroom phone is broken, which Robert later says. Okay. So then it's kind of iffy, depending on the source. Some sources say that she then goes to her room for her cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
Other sources say that she grabs the cordless phone from Leslie's dressing room and reconnects to 911, which makes more sense. Why would you grab your cell phone?
Right.
She then screams, quote, oh my God, there's blood everywhere. Hmm. Jenna then sees Robert carrying Leslie and screams. This is heart-wrenching.
Yeah.
She screams, my mother, oh my God, my mommy.
Oh.
She's 23. Oh. I just got goosebumps.
God.
And she's, my mom. I mean,
it's
horrifying listening to it. And then starts yelling at her dad.
Yeah.
Quote, dad, put her down. Her neck might be broken. Why the fuck are you moving?
He's a doctor.
Thank you. So Robert put Leslie down to perform mouth to mouth, but then picks her up to move her again. Jenna can be heard again saying, quote, daddy, don't move her. Daddy, stop moving her, please.
How is the 23-year-old smarter than a fucking doctor?
So he finally places her by the bed, which is approximately 50 to 60 feet from the shower.
Okay.
Okay. So now Sergeant Scott Caprell said they get the call for the fall in the shower. And he says, quote, the expectations are that she's going to be there in the shower.
Right.
Or immediately right outside the shower. I walk into the actual bedroom, and that's when I catch all of the blood. He said he noticed blood in several areas. There were several poolings of blood on the rug, mm-hmm. and there was blood spatter on the walls next to the bed.
Ooh.
She fell in the shower?
Yeah, that doesn't add up to me.
Paramedics arrive, obviously, followed by PD, mm-hmm. okay? Because that's what we do.
Right.
Scene
is secure.
Scene is secure. So the sergeant said that his radar immediately started going off and he needed to know where all the blood came from.
Yeah.
One of the paramedics then approaches Robert and says, basically, I'm going to come to you on your level. Like, I know you're a doctor. There is nothing that we can do. I want your permission to stop CPR.
Yeah.
Okay. Sergeant Caprell starts questioning Robert. And Robert tells him he found her on the shower floor, carried her into the bedroom where he could more comfortably do CPR.
What? Sorry, that's not a time for comfort. That's let's get shit done.
Do you remember when you called me and you're like 5:30 in the morning, and you're like, "Hey, how do you do CPR?" And I'm like, "Oh, like, yeah. Am I walking you through this now, or is this like an afterthought kind of thing?" And that's when you said, "Well, I put him down, and he like took a breath," and I was like, "No, that was his soul leaving his body." Yep. You were so pissed at me for like the whole day, and it was Dylan. He came in.
Yeah,
you were like, "Thank God," because you couldn't fit in the fucking room.
No, but he was like 400 pounds.
Yeah,
but that was the first and only time I did CPR. Yeah.
So. And I told you his soul was leaving his body. So the medical examiner then arrives on the scene.
Yeah.
He asks for a step-by-step of what Robert did. Now, Sergeant Caprell said, quote, "The whole thing was odd. The whole thing was out of character with a fall in the shower. But as he's relaying the story about what had occurred and the medical examiner's digesting it, and we're all digesting it, his actual story of step-by-step process fit the pattern of where you saw the different pools of blood. After hearing that and examining the scene and Leslie's injuries, the medical examiner said the scene, the medical examiner on the scene said the death was a tragic accident. His report would later say that she died of, quote, blunt force head injuries due to the fall from standing height. There was a bench in the shower, a marble bench. He said that she hit her head on the bench.
Mm-hmm. No.
Sergeant Caprell said that in his 20 years, which when I hear shit like that, I'm like, man, 20 years. And then I'm like, fuck me. Like, yeah. I've been a medic 20 years. Yeah.
Exactly.
I'm like, God damn it.
Where the fuck does time go?
He said he's never seen this kind of head trauma from a fall. The medical examiner then tried to explain how it could have happened. And Sergeant Caprell said at that point, okay, like, he's like, we're the police. We don't do medical shit. Like, we're taking his word for it. And what he's saying makes sense to us. Like,
yeah.
So Robert refused to give a formal statement at that time. Jenna gave one, though. She said that her dad, she saw her dad trying to get her mom out of the shower into the carpeted area. She went to the phone and came back to see that her mother had been moved again. She then said dad started, quote, working on her, putting his face up to hers to see if she was breathing. She then stated that she saw blood on the wall coming into the room.
Hmm.
Pin that.
Hmm.
Okay. So Jenna then sent out a text to friends saying that her mom had passed from a fall in the shower. Terry Barr's daughter was one of the friends that got the text. Her daughter was very close with Jenna. And Terry was actually very close with Leslie.
Yeah.
Terry had worked as an L&D labor and delivery nurse in Dr. Newlander's office, and she was one of the nurses who had been laid off twice.
Oh, no shit.
Because of the Blue Cross Blue Shield patients.
Yeah.
So she said that Robert was always good in an emergency, and it was never an issue. She had obviously worked with him numerous times.
Right.
So she immediately headed to the Newlander house and got there as the police were leaving. So when the police were inside and the medical examiner was there, like, the Sergeant Caprell's like, we got to figure out what the fuck happened.
Yeah.
The ME said it was an accident. Like, he shut the scene down immediately before the medical examiner got there. He said, I told the fire captain, like, get your guys, get your shit, get out. Like, we don't know what's going on.
Good.
The medical examiner said it was an accident and everybody had to clear out. They couldn't look at anything.
Right.
So later, Jenna asked Terry to make sure that there wasn't any blood on the floor in the bedroom. Terry didn't understand why there would be blood in the bedroom if she fell in the shower and she had what was described to Terry as a closed head injury. There shouldn't be any blood.
Yeah.
So she pulled the housekeeper aside and the housekeeper was like, there's blood everywhere. Yeah. So they went in the bedroom and Terry said that there was, in fact, blood everywhere to the point they couldn't clean it all up.
Oh, shit.
Terry was shocked when she saw the bedroom.
Yeah.
Her and the housekeeper tried to clean it, but it was soaked into the carpet. And Terry said that nothing made sense, and her mind immediately went to Leslie had been killed.
Yeah.
She said she didn't know that the ME said it was an accident and that Robert could explain away the blood. But she had to pretend, obviously, she wasn't thinking that.
Flip two pages.
Yeah. I can only rip so many pages out at 11:30 at night in the firehouse because it echoes in the fucking bay.
Yeah. Wakes everyone up.
So Terry spent much of the next week at the Newlander house, including being there when Robert got the call that Leslie's death was being officially filed as an accident.
Yeah.
While everyone else seemed to accept it, Terry just couldn't.
Yeah.
She couldn't understand how no one was, quote, putting the pieces of the puzzle together. Now, what Terry wasn't really telling anybody was that just a couple days prior to this, Leslie had called her and said, Robert and I are getting a divorce.
Yeah.
Let's meet for coffee. I want to talk about it. Like, we're sleeping in separate bedrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And Terry said, she asked her, you know, are you okay? And Leslie said, I'm fine. I'm good. We'll talk about it in a couple days. And yeah. They never got the chance to.
Oh, damn.
So a month goes by. No one is saying anything about Leslie's death being anything but an accident.
Mm-hmm.
Terry said it weighed on her that no one was doing anything. But she didn't want to be the first to accuse.
Yeah.
So she went to her priest for advice.
Yeah.
And the priest was like, I'm a fucking priest. Go to the police.
What am I going to do?
Right.
I got to keep everything to myself.
So she thought the case was closed, so she didn't go to the police. But she got an idea. Months prior, at Leslie's home, they had a book club meeting.
Ooh.
Now, the book that they were reading about, was about a husband who killed his wife.
No shit.
One of the friends of Leslie's that was in attendance said that if anybody had any questions about the book or the procedures in the book, that they could go ahead and ask her.
Mm.
Here's the twist.
Ooh, the twist and the turn.
That friend was Mary Jambelic, the woman who fell. That woman was Dr. Mary Jambelic.
Oh.
Before retiring in 2009, she was the county's chief medical examiner.
No shit.
Terry thought,
oh, that's wild.
Who better to ask?
Yeah.
So she finally made the call to Mary, and she hoped at the very least Mary could maybe explain it to her and make her understand how it was an accident.
Yeah.
Now, Mary had 20 plus years of criminal justice experience. She said that she had faith in the system and assumed that any wrongdoing would have come out already.
Mm-hmm.
She said that, you know, she, prior to retiring, that her profession had become popularized by, you know, CSI and all that shit.
Yeah, and all the TV shit.
She said, you know, she wasn't sure what Terry was really concerned about. She knew from her own recent fall that anything can happen. But as she listened, she said, you know, she would have family come to her. And she said, you always need to consider what someone else is saying, regardless of their knowledge or understanding of the incident. You always want to take it into account.
Yeah, of course.
So she listened to Terry detail the scene and the blood that she saw. And at first, nothing really stuck out to Mary, but was concerned with the level of Terry's concern and told her, go to the police and give a statement.
Yeah.
It'll make you feel better.
It's not going to hurt.
Right. She said that she didn't think speaking to her would help Terry, so she told her, just go to the police and give a statement.
Right. It's not going to hurt.
So one thing that really nagged at Terry constantly was Robert moving Leslie to do CPR, not once, but twice.
Yeah, that's weird.
Terry had been Robert's labor and delivery nurse for years, and she said that he had always been good in an emergency. And she's right when she says this, instinct takes over.
Yeah,
everybody knows not to move a body.
Absolutely, yep.
Your loved one or not, you know, especially your loved one.
Yep.
You know not to move a body, and instinct takes over.
It takes over.
If they're laying on the floor, you're checking for a pulse, and you're immediately getting on the chest.
Especially if you've done it thousands of times.
Right, so you're going to turn the fucking water off.
Yeah.
And you're not going to care if she's on carpet. She's
right.
on a hard...
It's not going to make a difference.
She's on a hard floor. She's not on the bed. If she was on the bed, get her off the bed.
Right.
She's on a hard floor. Your bathroom is big enough to have a shower with a bench in it and a fucking phone. Don't tell me you didn't have room on the floor to do CPR. So that's what she said. It drove her fucking nuts. Like, she had seen him in an emergency. He had never panicked.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't move people.
Right.
Especially from a fault that she hit her head that fucking hard.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Terry was still very apprehensive about going to the police, but the opportunity presented itself not too long after. She was actually working in a different doctor's office, and a police officer came in to the office that she was working at.
Ooh.
And she said, hey. Let me fucking rack your brain here for a minute.
Hey.
So she asked him a couple questions, and he immediately said, you need to speak to my partner.
What had happened was,
so she didn't want to go, like, to the police station. She didn't want to be seen doing that. So they came to her, and it was Sergeant Caprell. So what they couldn't tell Terry was that the case wasn't entirely closed.
Hmm.
They were getting comments from the community. They were hearing things. There were some rumblings that had been happening since she died.
Yeah.
2 days after Leslie's death, the district attorney actually received an anonymous letter. It was an outline, essentially, of the Newlanders' personal lives that nobody was talking about.
Yeah.
It was clear enough that the writer wanted the case investigated further. And it stated that Dr. Newlander was not the good guy that everybody thought, and that Leslie was trying to break away from him.
Mm.
They couldn't figure out who the letter came from.
Yeah.
It was obviously somebody on the inside. They still don't know.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, still don't know.
Wow.
But now these detectives have someone confirming what was in that letter. Mm-hmm. Because Terry said, she called me. She said she was getting a divorce.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but the police were still like, we have to rely on the medical examiner's findings.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
He
you,
said
you
again,
have to.
Basically, he's like, we're the dumb cops. They're the medical people.
Exactly.
Like, we listen to them. We don't tell them how to do their job. They don't tell us how to do ours.
And felony review goes off that.
So 3 months after Leslie's death, Robert started making phone calls. He called Mary Jambelic and her husband, and it was the first time that they had spoken with him since her death.
Mm-hmm.
She said it was random chit-chat, but she said his tone felt off. He stated that he was sorry he had been out of touch, and he's going to kind of continue to be out of touch. He's going to go visit his daughter, who's in Israel studying.
Yeah.
She said something about all of it got her thinking. And then all she had were her thoughts and Terry's suspicions. But she kind of felt like she was responding to gossip. And she didn't really know how to handle it, but knew that if she didn't do something about it, it would eat at her like it was eating at Terry.
Yeah, of course.
So she reached out to her old colleague, District Attorney Bill Fitzpatrick. Love Bill Fitzpatrick.
Okay.
She felt, again, at the very least, that she could, quote, close the loop and put the speculation and the rumors to rest. Mary asked Bill if he could make the file available to her, and he then asked if she would take a look at it professionally, mm-hmm. as opposed to just, you know.
Right.
So Mary said she had to seriously think about it and the effect that it could have on her personally. This was one of her best friends.
Exactly.
And now you're not just looking at the file to look at the file. Like, they want your professional opinion.
Fuck yeah.
So
it's big time.
But at this point, she thought that she might be the best person to really put the rumors to rest.
Yeah.
So Bill gave her everything. Everything.
Wow.
She looked at the medical examiner's report, and she could see how he came to his conclusion. She said that there was a finding in the brain that he attributed to a fall and, quote, latched onto that finding and felt that it explained what happened as portrayed by Bob.
Mm-hmm.
She then said, quote, My focus for my entire career has been to speak for the dead. I just dropped my vape.
Oh, God, you dropped your vape. Gotta get the vape.
I did. Hang on.
Turning on the flashlight now, because you're old
as
fuck.
Okay. She felt that Leslie was telling her what happened, and it became devastating to her.
Yeah.
The severity of Leslie's injuries did not match the explanation.
Mm.
Leslie had 5 penetrating wounds towards the back of her head.
What?
She also had multiple injuries to her face.
Yeah.
The, quote, pattern of injuries, what the fuck did I write? The pattern of injuries that's not explained by the story. There was also blood pooling to her eye, which caused a severe black eye.
Yeah.
And even the detective said that he'd never seen a fucking eye like that.
Yeah.
This is caused by bleeding on the inside, and it kind of goes over. It's the easiest way to explain it. So Mary had said that she had seen head injuries this severe before, but only in, quote, car accidents, falls from 20-story buildings, and severe beatings.
Oh.
And that an injury like this can be caused by getting hit with, quote, a heavy object of some sort. Mary also took notice of the crime scene photos. Not only were there pools of blood, but there was blood spatter at the bedside, on the lamps,
yeah,
on the water bottles on the nightstand.
No shit.
And on the walls.
Oh, that's weird.
The totality of it all hit Mary. She said, quote, Leslie was murdered.
Yeah.
She died as a result of blunt head trauma, and the manner was homicide.
Mm-hmm.
The professional side came to a scientific conclusion, but it didn't make it easy on her. She said she speaks for the dead, even if it hurts the living.
Yeah.
She immediately calls Fitzpatrick and tells him it's homicide. So he then goes to the current medical examiner and asks him to review the manner, not necessarily the cause,
right,
but the manner.
Right.
He then got a group together of the current medical examiner and other pathologists. Other pathologists' opinions matched Mary's that it looks like homicide.
No shit.
But the current ME would not change the manner from accident.
Really?
So their hands are tied.
Wow.
Until Fitzpatrick says, regardless of this, the final decision whether to prosecute this as a homicide is ultimately up to him.
Yeah.
Regardless of what the medical examiner says.
Right.
So it got around quickly that they're now investigating Robert.
Yeah.
The family wholly supported Robert.
Really?
Her siblings, his kids.
Wow.
Till the end.
Wow. Yeah.
And Robert's attorney defended him in the media. He retained one of the best criminal defense attorneys in the city, mm-hmm, Edward Menken. And he said that this was a, quote, open secret and the subject of gossip and irresponsible rumor for months. And that these allegations were ludicrous.
Yeah.
Now here comes Nevin Robbie.
Oh, Nevin.
He saw newspaper articles. And when it became evident that this was now an investigation, he went to the police.
Good. That's what you should do.
Sometimes you just have to, regardless of what it's going to do.
Yeah.
He said that
good for him.
Leslie didn't really talk about the marriage in detail, but would give, quote, crumbs. She never said anything good about Robert, had talked about alleged affairs, told him about the confrontation over the text, and said it was unknown if Leslie told Robert about Nevin, or if he just found him. Days before she died, she told Nevin, we are splitting. We sat the kids down. We told the kids, mm-hmm, I'm getting an apartment. I'm signing the lease.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. So per DA Fitzpatrick, several friends and acquaintances knew and stated that Leslie was ready to move on with the divorce. Again, including Terry.
Yeah.
So now all these people are coming forward.
Right.
So now April of 2013. So this was September of 2012 that she died. Okay. April of 2013. The detectives now wanted to look in the house because they didn't get to it at the time of death.
Yeah.
They were skeptical about finding much because it had been several months.
Oh, it's been forever.
And the house had been sold.
Oh.
However, the new owners had not moved in and they had not touched anything.
Really?
And they told the police, you come on in, you do what you got to do.
No shit. Take good what for you them. Take. Good for them.
The detective said that it appeared as if the Newlanders hadn't touched anything since Leslie died.
Wow.
He said it almost looked as if the shower hadn't even been cleaned.
No,
there was still
shit.
There was still blood in the shower.
Oh, my God.
He could see the outline of stains and blood in the carpet, and there was dried blood in the shower. He then saw blood spatter on the blinds behind the bed, and the detective was staring at a built-in headboard. It was black fabric with a pattern on it. But the way that the sun hit it, he sees a red stain.
Oh.
He said he didn't notice the headboard even the day of because it was covered with pillows.
Yeah.
This stain didn't match any of the story. Robert never, according to him, put Leslie on the bed.
Right.
How would there be blood there?
Right.
So they pulled the tape of Jenna's interview to see if she mentioned the bed. They asked her, did you see your dad doing chest compressions?
Right.
And she says, I don't remember.
Yeah.
Okay. You're not.
I get it.
Whew, you know, it was right after.
It's a stressful moment.
She does say, though, that she touched her mother and her jaw was, quote, really stiff.
Hmm.
Huh. Rigor much?
I was just going to say that.
Well,
That doesn't sound right.
She did say that her mother had been moved twice, and she never mentioned anything about the bed. So now, at this point, Robert obviously had moved. He's living in a downtown apartment, and the detectives want to talk to him, and they want to search the apartment.
Yeah.
So Fitzpatrick approached Robert's attorney and requested a meeting. Mencken assured Fitzpatrick that his client had nothing to hide, and Robert voluntarily sat with investigators and prosecutors. Mm. He acknowledged that him and Leslie were sleeping in separate beds and were talking about a trial separation. Despite the marital issues, Robert made the household sound peaceful and loving, and said that the night before she died, they, along with Ari and Jenna, had a family dinner at a friend's house. Ari then went back to his dorm. Jenna went home with her parents. He said, quote, "We said goodnight to each other, and we loved each other, and everybody kissed and went to their respective bedrooms."
Mm.
"You, sir, are full of shit."
Yeah, I'm not buying that.
"You're full of shit."
Yeah.
Early the next morning, Robert went for a jog at Green Lakes State Park. He said that's his usual routine.
Yeah.
Not, he said, it was never said if that's where he normally jogs. It was right. The state park close to the house.
Right.
So he brings Leslie her usual cup of coffee, and he says, quote, "The shower is on, I hear the water running, and I place it on the nightstand." He said he went to check on Leslie about an hour later and found her lying on the shower floor. He said then he started CPR and tried to call 911 from the bathroom, but the phone was not working. So he ran towards Jenna's room, yelling for her to call 911, and went back to Leslie and began to move her.
Yeah.
He put her down right outside the bathroom to give her mouth to mouth. Silly man. It's all about compressions.
Yep.
Not mouth to mouth.
And everyone knows that now.
Mm-hmm. So then he moved her again.
Oh, my God.
He placed her next to the bed to continue CPR. Fitzpatrick then said, quote, "I don't know at what age we all learn that you don't move somebody with a serious head or neck injury,"
right.
"But we all know it."
Exactly.
"And here's a guy that's been practicing medicine for 30 years. There's more red flags than a bullfight going off in my head when I hear that story from him for the first time."
Yeah.
Yeah. So now at this point, Fitzpatrick had developed his own theory. Robert assaulted Leslie in the bedroom, then chased her into the bathroom hours before the 911 call was placed.
Mm-hmm.
He then hit her head against the shower bench or hit her head with something and moved her to account for the blood trail that went from the bedroom to the bathroom.
Yeah.
He called for Jenna to have a witness of Leslie in the shower.
Oh.
He didn't realize that blood was on the headboard and the blinds because it was dark when the attack happened. Now, how is there blood on the headboard, but not on the sheets?
Yeah.
Fitzpatrick stated that he believed that Robert got rid of the sheets along with the murder weapon. The housekeeper told detectives that she was absolutely certain that the sheets on the bed the day that Leslie died were not the same sheets that she put on the bed the Friday before.
Ooh, juicy.
Fitzpatrick believes that Robert's quote-unquote run was really him throwing the murder weapon and the sheets in Green Lake. As the evidence began mounting, the medical examiner, Dr. Robert Stoppiger, I believe is how you say it, changed the manner of death from accidental to intentional homicide.
Ooh, I dropped my phone. Oh, well.
Good. He would later say during the trial that he was in the Newlander house for approximately 45 minutes the day Leslie died. He believed that her death was between 3 to 6 hours prior to him arriving, and he got there probably by like 9 o'clock. I couldn't find what time he got there.
Yeah.
But it was shortly after police and EMS got there. Like,
okay.
Paramedics, you know,
yeah,
called it, and then he showed up.
Yeah.
So it couldn't have been that much further. So he declared it an accident after talking to Robert about what happened, but over the course of several months following Leslie's death, he got more information and came to believe that Leslie was hit and the headboard was involved. Fitzpatrick took the case and the new evidence to a grand jury. They returned with an indictment for first-degree murder.
Damn.
On June 23rd, 2014, Dr. Robert Neulander was arrested and charged with Leslie's murder and tampering with evidence.
Wow.
Fitzpatrick told reporters, quote, "The defendant moved the body of Leslie Neulander after her death to make it appear as if she had died from an accidental fall in the shower." Despite this, Robert's family and some of Leslie's stuck by him.
That's crazy.
In March of 2015, the case was a media frenzy leading up to the trial. It was a prominent doctor on trial with two formidable attorneys battling it out. Fitzpatrick said, quote, "It has all the elements, the rich defendant, the beautiful wife, yeah, and the mystery surrounding it."
It does.
The elements of, was it a homicide? Was it an accident? So this was huge for the community.
Right.
Robert's attorney told reporters, quote, "I have never had a client whose innocence I believe in more firmly than him."
Wow.
Robert was then released on a $100,000 bond. On March 16th, 2015...
Which is nothing for a murder case.
No. The trial began in Syracuse. Robert arrived at court every day with Ari and Jenna and his two other kids and Leslie's brother and sister. The defense's case was he didn't do anything.
Yeah.
What happened was not a crime.
Right.
The prosecution went in with no clear motive, and it was risky because juries want answers. We were just talking about that.
Yeah.
Fitzpatrick felt the evidence with the blood spatter and the second look at the case by Mary Jambelic would be enough.
Mm-hmm.
The prosecution enlisted the help of forensic scientist Karen Green to do blood spatter analysis. I could go into what she did.
Oh, God,
she recreated it. She said that the spatter was mostly impact spatter, which was created when Leslie was attacked in the bedroom. So impact spatter is you hit the blood flies.
Right.
Okay.
Right. It's pretty self-explanatory.
You would think. So the headboard, items on the nightstand south of the bed, the blinds above the bed, and the south wall about 7 feet south of the bed were covered in blood spatter.
Ooh.
She was able to recreate the spatter with a, quote, impact event, an impact scenario. She took a rock and put a wig on it to simulate Leslie's head on the bed. The only way that that blood spatter could have been recreated was if she was on or near the south end of the bed. Damn. Leslie had to have been on the bed.
Yeah.
The defense mocked this. They said it was nothing more than, quote, whacking a mannequin over the head.
No.
They brought their own blood expert, who said it was not possible to determine accident or homicide because of a flawed investigation. So you're not even talking about the blood spatter.
Right. Right.
They said that there were not enough close-up pictures of the blood. Some of the blood evidence was not collected for months, and they even suggested that the EMTs could have caused the blood spatter. Are you ready for this bullshit?
Oh, come on.
First responders had blood on their hands. When they removed their gloves, blood flew off the gloves.
Oh, yeah, because that always
happens. And created a cast-off blood.
That always happens.
First of all, I've had a lot of blood on my gloves. That has never fucking happened in my 20 fucking years.
Right.
They also said that it could have been from Robert himself because he said that he had been wearing a long sleeve shirt that became saturated in blood. And when he removed his shirt, it caused the spatter. So you changed? You changed.
Yeah.
Here's the problem. Fitzpatrick called bullshit.
Yeah.
He said paramedics are literally trained to carefully remove their gloves.
Right.
We are. You fold them inside themselves.
Exactly.
No gloves or shirt could have even created that much blood. They never found a long sleeve shirt. There's no long sleeve shirt. Okay.
You don't say.
So now the defense is insisting that it's an accident and that the reason that she fell was because she had vertigo. Her personal trainer said that her condition had gotten worse. Robert stated that she was in physical therapy for her vertigo, which is a thing. It's an actual thing.
Oh, yeah.
Sister Joanne London said she testified that it ran in the family and she also had it. And this was huge for the jury to see her sister defending him.
Him.
Essentially.
Yeah. That's big.
So now the defense also hired medical examiner Dr. Daniel Spitz from Michigan. And I'm like, Spitz, why do I know that name? Werner Spitz. Not related. He was the one who did, like, JonBenet.
Okay.
So, I don't know how or why they retained him from Michigan. He's a piece of work.
Is he?
So when he first, he took over for his father, I believe. Do not quote me. And immediately they were filing, the office was filing complaints that he was it was a tyranny and he was just, he got rid of everybody. And
yeah.
And he was most recently involved in a sexual misconduct.
Of course he was.
So it wasn't him doing it though.
Okay.
Okay.
Sure.
It was, they alleged he knew about it and he didn't do anything about it. Okay. And it was a bunch of broads in the office.
Yeah.
Like sexually harassing people. And like they brought a giant penis cake. Like it's a bunch of fucking chicks doing it.
Right. That's awesome.
So they're alleging that
I'm sorry, but that's awesome.
And at some point, like this guy's always on the fucking news talking about shit. So
yeah.
I focused on him because of how he said the injury, because I'm a huge fan of this. You know that.
Yeah.
So he used animations to recreate a head injury that would occur from a backwards fall into a stationary object, which he was saying was the marble bench in the shower. Yeah. So he brings draw rings. So he said Leslie fell back. The right side of her head hit the stationary object. This caused the brain to strike her skull toward the site of impact. The abrupt stop of the head caused the brain to bounce back, striking the opposite side of the skull and causing injury to the other side. What do we call this? Coup contra coup.
Mm-hmm.
I love coup contra coup.
Coup contra coup.
Love it. Fitzpatrick then said, no. He referred to a book that Dr. Spitz had co-edited stating that coup contra coup injuries can also occur when an object is used to strike a person in the head.
Gotcha. Gotti.
Which is what the prosecution witness testified to.
Gotti.
Fitzpatrick also produced an animation of Dr. Spitz's that showed Leslie's fall in the shower would have caused a vertical injury to her head.
Mm.
Leslie's injury was horizontal.
Ah.
If she fell backwards, it would have been like this on the back of her head.
Right.
Her injury was right here.
Oh.
On the right side of her head.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Another page I couldn't rip out. So, the prosecution countered the defense's argument, stating that Leslie had at least two blows to her head and the skull, and the wound was not consistent with her head striking a straight edge, like a stone shower bench.
Yeah.
Dr. Mary Jambelic did not testify, but was listed as a consulting physician with the prosecution. She said, quote, it should be like a simple linear fracture, so just a straight line, with some bleeding underneath of it, underneath of the scalp. But you don't get the complex depressed fracture like this.
Yeah.
It literally looked like she got hit with the, like, back end of an axe. It's like that
shit.
Shape.
That bad?
Jesus Christ, I just dropped my vape again.
Dude, you and your vape, man.
You dropped your phone.
I know.
Yeah. The injury on her head was fucking huge.
No shit.
It was like from almost from front to back.
Oh.
So she then said that Leslie's other injuries didn't add up to a slip and fall.
Yeah.
Quote, there are abrasions, scrapes of the skin on her cheek, bruising on her nose, more on the left side of her cheek as well, and bruising and scraping on her neck.
No shit.
Fitzpatrick questioned, quote, if she slipped and fell in the shower, why aren't there any injuries to her back and legs?
Yeah.
Her knees. Her elbows. Also critical to the prosecution's case, not just how Leslie died, but when. Dr. Spitz estimated that Leslie's time of death was around 7:30 a.m. Fitzpatrick states that the time of death could be as early as 4:15 a.m., which fits his theory of a pre-dawn assault.
Yeah.
He says, quote, the time of death is absolutely inconsistent with the defendant's story. The only other eyewitness to the event was Jenna.
Yeah. That's right.
The pain in the courtroom was palpable and spectators lined up to watch. Jenna was still dealing with her mother's death and wanted to make sure that her dad did not go to prison.
Oh my God, could you imagine?
No. Fitzpatrick said, quote, she's very important to the outcome of the case.
Yeah.
She was genuinely upset and mournful about testifying. The testimony forced her to bring some memories to the surface of her mother, who she clearly loved very much.
Yeah, you gotta relive that. Oh.
So Jenna stated that she was with Leslie in her room until 2 a.m. And she says that the sheets are the same, that they were the same as the ones in the death scene photos. The same sheets, the housekeeper said, no.
Yeah.
No. Jenna's 911 call came into question. And at one point in the call, she yells, So like I said before, at one point in the call, she yells, quote, "Oh my God, there's blood everywhere." Both the prosecution and the defense say that this statement is key and supports their case.
Yeah.
The prosecution believed that Jenna was running into the bathroom when she passed a trail of blood on the wall, like she said in her interview. Now, here's the problem. That trail of blood would not yet exist unless Leslie was attacked earlier in the bedroom, then put in the shower. Fitzpatrick said, quote, "She has passed the entrance to the bathroom where there's a significant amount of blood on the wall that could have only come from Leslie's head, perhaps by being pushed against the wall or perhaps being chased." Then Jenna grabbed the landline to reconnect with 911 and yelled, "There's blood everywhere." Fitzpatrick stated her excluding mom in that sentence means she hadn't seen Leslie yet, just the blood. Jenna then drops the phone and sees Leslie for the first time as Robert carries her body out of the shower and around the corner. And it's pure anguish. Like I said, she yells, yeah, oh my God, my mother, my mommy.
Yeah.
Fitzpatrick says, quote, "As painful as it is to listen to, it is inconceivable that that call is anything other than a declaration of guilt against her father."
Yeah.
The defense says the exact opposite. They said the call proves Robert's innocence. When Jenna runs into the bathroom, there is no blood on the walls. She picks up the phone by the toilet, drops it because it's not working, rushes to help Robert, which she never said.
No.
She helps carry Leslie to an area right outside the bedroom, which,
that's
again,
never said.
She never said it. Jenna then stated she grabbed a cordless phone from Leslie's dressing room and reconnects to 911, and this is when Jenna sees blood on and around her mother. The defense states that she is now reacting to seeing her mother for the first time in front of her. Jennifer was asked on the stand if she saw blood on her way to the, quote, water closet, and she said, quote, no. But she said in her initial interview, she did.
Yeah. It's a stressful moment.
Yeah. This supports the defense's theory that Jenna saw blood for the first time when she sees Leslie for the first time.
Yeah.
Fitzpatrick argues, though, that all of that that Jenna said that she did with the defense questioning could not have happened in the 13 seconds that 911 was on hold.
Yeah, yeah.
He said it's not even a close question. It took him and others approximately 50 seconds every time they tried to reenact it. Jenna also told the jury that she saw her father remove a blood-soaked long-sleeve shirt and throw it to the side. This is the same shirt, obviously, the defense said caused some of the blood spatter in the bedroom.
And was never found.
No one saw Robert in a long sleeve shirt,
right,
and the shirt's never been found. Now, Fitzpatrick, bless his heart, says, quote, "I don't think in her mind Jenna believes that her father did this.
Right.
I think she's created a protective world in her mind where mom slipped and fell in the shower."
Mom's dead. You don't want dad. Right. You don't want to lose dad. Right. Yeah.
He then went on to say that he's worried the jury is having an emotional reaction to Jenna's agony and that they know that Jenna wants a not guilty and that Robert is unlikely to reoffend.
Right.
All the emotions can be a detriment to proving a case beyond a reasonable doubt. After 8 days, Fitzpatrick gave his closing arguments, and he asked the jury to pay close attention to the physical evidence, specifically the blood spatter on the walls and Leslie's multiple injuries and the critical 911 call. Now, one thing not mentioned was the prosecution's belief of what the motive was. Robert found out that Leslie was going to sign an apartment lease the day she died, and he flew into a murderous rage.
Mm-hmm.
The memory of the witness had changed. She originally said that it was just Leslie signing the lease, and then closer to trial, she said that it was both of them.
Oh.
Now, Nevin Roby was never brought in to testify.
Which I'm surprised.
Fitzpatrick felt that it would be more of a distraction than it was worth. Because they still had other people to say, no, she was getting a divorce. She told us this.
Yeah, I get it.
He didn't want them to be distracted by texts that nobody had.
Yeah,
the texts were gone. So Robert's attorney said that there was no motive because Robert is innocent. He never said the term not guilty. He always said innocent. After 3 days of deliberation, the jury reached a verdict. And on April 2nd, 2015, they found Robert guilty of second-degree murder and tampering with evidence for covering the crime scene by staging the fall in the shower.
Wow.
They deliberated over 4 days for 18 hours, and after they read the verdict, Jenna yelled, quote, "I was there. You didn't do it."
Wow.
A visibly upset Mencken said to the media, quote, Bob Newlander is the most honorable person I have ever met. This case has been a travesty from start to finish, and it is not finished. The Newlander children immediately hired a new attorney for the appeal. They hired attorney Gerald Shargel, and he is legendary for his defense of mob boss John Gotti.
Oh.
He immediately said that there was going to be an appeal based on serious juror misconduct. On May 14th, 2015, Shargel filed an appeal calling for the verdict to be tossed due to serious juror misconduct.
Yeah.
On the day the verdict was read, an alternate juror contacted one of Robert's attorneys. He stated that one of the jurors had been talking about the case.
Oh.
Juror number 12, Jonah Lorraine, was a 23-year-old cheerleading coach who had visited numerous websites of news organizations that were closely covering the case. When she was questioned about it, she lied. She doctored some of her text messages.
Oh.
She deleted more. And she cleared her internet browsing history.
Oh, dumb, dumb.
They dumped her phone.
Yeah.
And they found 7,000 texts
exchanged
with friends and family during the three-week trial.
Oh, Jesus.
This was a direct violation of Judge Thomas Miller's orders to not discuss the case.
Yeah.
Some of the texts were prejudicial, including one from her father that said, quote, make sure he's guilty.
Oh,
she didn't respond to it. She did acknowledge that she violated the judge's orders, but did not say why, and she said that none of the texts affected her deliberations.
Yeah.
On July 8th of 2015, a jury misconduct hearing was held.
Mm-hmm.
And on July 27th, the request for a new trial was denied.
Wow.
The judge held up upheld the conviction and stated that the juror was undecided in the early stages of deliberations and in the end took her role seriously.
Yeah.
So now sentencing could now move forward.
Yeah.
The kids came to court carrying family photos, and they asked for the minimum of 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
Joanne Leslie London spoke on behalf of the family. This was Leslie's, Joanne London, this was Leslie's
right.
sister, said, quote, had any of us ever slightly suspected foul play of any sort, we would not be here today on Bob's behalf. Robert addressed the court for the first time, saying, quote, my head is unbowed by the verdict of this court, for an innocent man has been wrongfully convicted. I would not and did not take a life. I love my wife, Leslie, very much, and I mourn her every day, now and forever. And the judge said, fuck you.
Yeah, poo-poo on you.
Poo-poo on you. And July 30th of 2015, Robert was sentenced to 20 years in prison.
Damn.
Judge Thomas Miller said, quote, in the jury's eyes, Dr. Newlander, you intentionally murdered your wife and then attempted to use your own daughter to cover it up.
Yeah.
Your daughter, who most clearly adores you, which is as diabolical as it gets.
It is.
Dr. Mary Jemblick said, quote, I hate what this has done to Jenna. That's probably the most painful thing of all.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
He brought Jenna into the process. He made her a witness for his own purposes, and that is cruel.
Mm-hmm.
July of 2018, after 3 years of appeals, Robert's guilty verdict was overturned.
Oh, my God.
On claims of juror misconduct.
Wow.
He was then released on a $1 million bail.
Wow.
Which his family paid immediately.
No way.
Prosecutors appealed to the state's highest court to reinstate the guilty verdict. In October of 2019, the New York State Court of Appeals upheld overturning the conviction and granted a new trial on a 3-2 vote.
Wow.
They said even if juror number 12's, quote, intentions were pure, we conclude that this juror's intentions are not relevant to the analysis.
Yeah.
Every defendant has a right to be tried by jurors who follow the court's instructions, do not lie in sworn affidavits about their misconduct during the trial,
mm-hmm.
and do not make substantial efforts to conceal and erase their misconduct when the court conducts an inquiry with respect thereto.
I get it.
A new trial was set for June of 2020. COVID pushed it back to 2022.
Oh, yeah.
So now, side note, because I can't remember exactly when it happened. Fitzpatrick's daughter was interning.
Oh, really?
In the office.
Yeah.
She's going through all the photos.
Yeah.
And stops and says, So there's blood spatter on the nightstand, the blinds, the headboard, the water bottles. How come it's not on the coffee cup?
Oh.
Pristine. Ivory.
That's wow. I didn't even think of that.
She found it.
Good for her, man. That's a great catch.
So on February 28th, 2022, the second trial of Robert started with jury selections. Judge Thomas Miller would again preside, and DA Fitzpatrick would help prosecute the case, but Chief ADA Melinda McGuinnell will take the lead. Mm-hmm. There's two significant differences in this trial versus the first one. They have found additional incriminating evidence, and Jenna Newlander would not be called to testify. They decided, the prosecution decided, that they couldn't do that to her again.
No, fuck no.
They didn't need to. In 2021, the headboard had been re-examined. Ooh. Because the police hoard shit.
The police.
Quote, mummified fat tissue from Leslie's head.
Oh my God.
Was found on the headboard.
Oh, you son of a bitch, you.
This reiterated the theory that Robert attacked Leslie on the bed.
Yep. You sly son of a bitch.
Advanced blood analysis turned up multiple blood droplets on the nightstand, the tissue box, the lampshade, and the water bottles. Quote, but there wasn't a drop of blood on that pristine ivory cup of coffee. It was as clear as the driven snow, and that's where he screwed up. Why did they say pure as the driven snow?
I don't know.
Does that mean like snow you drive on? Because that's not
sure,
pure.
It's not.
Please somebody explain that to me.
Yeah, I don't get it either.
I'm an idiot.
Well, I'm right there with you.
Investigators surmise that Robert placed the cup there after murdering Leslie.
Yes, exactly.
Jenna's 911 call was played, but she did not testify.
Mm-hmm.
On March 17th of 2022, Dr. Robert Newlander was convicted of murdering his wife for a second time.
Nice.
The jury deliberated this time for 6 hours.
Wow.
Robert's new attorney, Jonathan Bach, had already started the groundwork for an appeal.
Of course.
Because Judge Miller refused to move the case to a different county, dismissing concerns about a biased jury pool.
Yeah.
During sentencing, the family submitted letters asking for leniency. Robert also spoke and asked for leniency. He asked for a sentence that would allow him to die surrounded by his family. And again,
a poo-poo
on you.
On you.
Judge Miller said in May of 2022, you are sentenced to 20 years. Robert Newlander is serving his sentence at Elmira Correctional Facility in New York State, and he will not be eligible for parole until December of 2038.
Nice.
When he's going to be old as fuck.
Right, right. Oh, man, that's good.
That is the case of Leslie Newlander.
That was good. Judy, good pick. That was really good.
She's been so excited for this because she's texting me like, so what do you think about it? What do you think about it? She's like, he's a piece of shit. And I was like, he is a piece of shit.
Yeah, I think he totally did it.
Hearing
all the evidence,
the blood spatter in the bedroom. There's no other way for that to be there.
Yeah.
There's no other fucking reason for that to be there.
Yeah.
And then you're a doctor, dude.
Yeah, you know better.
What are you doing?
Yeah, you know better.
I've done CPR in the dark.
Right.
I cannot tell you how many times I've done CPR on a fucking bathroom floor because of a commode code.
Exactly.
And I'm in a room that's 2 feet by 2 feet and my partner's 6'4", 300 fucking pounds.
Right.
You and I were in a fucking room together.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, and we couldn't do anything. You said you were going to bite my butt.
I did.
That was the day that I met... Yeah.
Elise.
Yeah, because I was a BLS crew.
Yeah.
And we were in a room that was 2 feet by 2 fucking feet. Yeah,
and the guy got beat by his brother
with
an blender.
Iron and a blender.
It was a blender.
And yeah, I was trying to hold C-spine.
And it looked like a fucking massacre.
There was nowhere to go.
No.
So I was standing over him, straddling him. You were next to him.
Holding the brother down because he was fighting with us.
Yeah, and then you were going to tase him in the nuts.
Yeah. Because
I told him to quit spitting.
Yeah.
You thought he spit on me, so you were going to tase him in the nuts. And then the one who I met, she was wiping my face off outside.
Yeah.
She's like, it's so nice to meet you. This is terrible, but come here. You have blood. So, I mean, you work in what you have.
Right.
That's your wife.
Yeah. Come on, dude.
You don't fucking... That's what got me. The minute I read that he moved her...
Yeah.
And he didn't turn the water off.
He didn't turn the water off. When you said that made so much sense.
And okay, so... I had so many questions that I couldn't find the answers to. Like, when the detective turned the water off, was it cold?
Right.
Was she cold?
Right.
Because if her time of death, according to the defense's medical examiner, was 7:30, she was in that shower for an hour.
Yeah.
I don't care how good your water heater is.
No, it's going to be cold.
That's cold motherfucking water.
Yeah.
So at that point, they're not going to work her. They're going to check the water.
Exactly.
You're not dead until you're warm and dead.
Yeah.
But... which means that water. Oh, see, I just had a thought. Okay. You're not dead until you're warm and dead. That water could not have been cold. Because if that water was on her cold, you have what, 20 minutes from a good water heater?
Oh, yeah.
25, 30 with two water heaters?
If that.
So she was under that water cold for 30 minutes, which means paramedics could not have called her, at least in the state of Illinois.
Yeah.
Because again, you're not dead until you're warm and dead.
Yep. Yeah.
Because being cold could actually fix you.
Right.
So if she was under cold water, they couldn't have called it.
Yeah.
Fuck, I'm smart.
God, you are.
Damn it.
You just brought that up. That's fucking good thinking.
Yeah, I just thought of that. Because, yeah, you're not dead till you're
dead.
Man,
you should have been my partner.
Oh, I'm telling you. I should have been a fucking guy.
Dude, the three of us, you, me, and Ivan.
Oh, fuck, God, man.
We would
be in jail.
Yeah, we would be. Yeah. Fuck, yeah. Well,
like in Will County.
Oh, I know.
We'd get fucked.
Yeah, we would. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, anyways, that was a great case. I thank you, Judy, for recommending that. Jamie, thank you for digging. I'm glad I didn't look it up. So I was surprised.
Good.
That actually caught my interest pretty well.
I couldn't look at you the whole time.
Yeah, I know. I don't have my shades on.
It's fucking weird.
You know what? What I forgot to tell you is
Jesus fucking.
No, yesterday I had to use dog shampoo taking a shower.
You're a fucking idiot.
I felt like a good boy.
I don't even know what to fucking say to that one. That's fucking terrible.
It's amazing.
That's terrible.
It's amazing.
That's, Jesus fuck.
All right. Well, if you guys can please like, follow, subscribe. If you want to join our Patreon, www.patreon.com/deathdouspart. Number one.
Oneater.
Yes.
That reminds me.
What?
Hang on.
Do you...
We have a new Patreon.
Oh, we have a new Patreon.
Fucking TikTok. Jesus Christ.
Okay, stand by. We
Sorry,
have a new
I'm a
Patreon.
Piece of shit. So the next case we're doing is Emmett Corrigan.
Okay.
And anybody who knows true crime and Dateline and Keith Morrison
knows that case.
Knows about Emmett Corrigan.
Yeah.
The one thing, Keith Morrison, bless your heart, you're 117, and the way he talked about this woman turning 40, I'm like, I feel personally fucking attacked. He said her 40th birthday was barreling down on her like a Chinese bullet train.
Oh, dude. Fuck you.
Keith.
Fuck you.
Keith. You're killing me.
Man.
Oh, we have a couple.
Okay.
So we have Rachel.
Rachel, thank you.
I believe it's Elena.
Elena, thank you.
I'll spell it so you know it's you. E-L-E-N-A.
Okay.
I believe that's Elena.
Yeah, okay. I think so.
And then Sam.
Sam, thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you guys for joining the family.
You guys are the tits.
So, anyways, we will be back with a new episode shortly.
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Yeah, and our next Patreon is going to be a good one. It's going to be
Phil Hartman.
So that's going to be a good one to join up and listen to.
That one's fucky.
So anyways, thank you guys for listening, and we will be talking to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant Sweet Tango Apples guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at SweetTango.com.